Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. I'm Steve Zocchi, along with my trusty sidekick, Jeff Orlowski.
Hello.
And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is David Hobbs. Where nobody knows a Honda better than Hobbs, amazing vehicle selection in Glendale. David, how are you doing, sir?
6100 North Green Bay Avenue in Glendale.
Where not only you can get a new Honda, but they have a nice variety of used vehicles, too.
Wonderful used vehicles, too. I'm good, thanks, Steve. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. The weather finally broke up here. It's almost safe for you to return.
Well, funny enough, I was just seeing that because I've just watched the 6 hour of Spa-Francorchamps in Belgium, and they had ages and ages behind the safety car because of torrential rain, hail, and they had a final red flag with about 10 minutes to go because it snowed. So, so weather definitely better down here in Florida than it is in Belgium or in Wisconsin, but it is improving. I will be returning.
Now, I know you've raced in the rain many times in a variety of vehicles, but did you ever have to race in the rain? I know there's a famous photo. Where was it? Brands Hatch or somebody of an F1 car running in winter testing where it was snowing out. But I mean, was there ever a time when you had to race in the snow? Are there snow flurries about?
Very close. At Silverstone in 1974, I was racing Carl Hogan's Formula 5000 car. He sent a car to England for me to take part in the British Championship or some of the events. And we raced at Silverstone, and I have a picture of me and Max and our two little boys. Greg, who was 57 yesterday, was about 8, I suppose. And Guy was about 6. And we are huddled there, and the snow is coming down very hard. It didn't snow in the race, but it did snow during practice. So, but my very first race at Spa-Francorchamps was back in 1960. Well, actually, my first race there was 66. But my second race there, it was in a GT40 for Wyatt in 1968. And the old track then was nearly 9 miles long, a lot longer than the current one. And, of course, it was all public roads. Surrounded by barbed wire fences, telephone poles, and houses. Right up to the road. And it rained for the entire six-hour race. And Jackie Ickx put on an absolutely virtuoso performance, coming through at the end of the first lap with a 35-second lead. Me and Paul Hawkins came fourth in that race, and it rained the entire time. I think it took us about 7 or 8 hours. It was supposed to take like 5. So that was my experience at Spa, where it does rain a lot. And, of course, when the Formula One guys go there in after the break, at the end of August, it very often can be very iffy, the weather there. So, I have raced in the rain quite a bit, Steve.
And there was one time, if you want to tell this, this is one of my favorite stories. I think it was, is this at Spa where you broke down by a farmhouse and you knocked on the door?
Yeah, that was the first time in 1966. Now, that was a hot day then. And I was driving with a guy called Jochen Neerpasch, who went on to, well, he was a very winning driver in Porsche, and he went on to be the competition manager of Ford and then ultimately BMW when I drove for them. But he drove the first stint, because it's a six-hour race, so he then got a couple of stints each. And the average speed was pretty high. It was around about 145, 150 mile an hour average through these wooded streets. Anyway, he comes in and gets out of the car, and then he gets out. He says, "Oh, by the way, Hobbo, it's just a little bit, it's running a bit warm." So when I get in and do the belts up, the temperature gauge is absolutely pegged. I mean, it can't go any further. Oh, great, Jochen. So I go bollocking off down the road, and I only did about four laps, I think. And finally, the thing, you know, had tried enough. And of course, in those days, as I said, houses were right next to the track. So I trickled up the hill from Stavelo towards the start-finish area, which is about another 3 or 4 miles away yet. And there was this farmhouse with an open yard. And I just trickled into the yard and stopped and got out and shut the door and went and banged on the farmhouse door and took my helmet off. And the guy's, come in and watch the race with me on the television. So I went into this house and had a cup of tea and watched the race on the television.
Fantastic stuff. Last week we had the Baku Grand Prix in manhole covers, which is, we've seen this in the past with tracks. We hadn't seen it in a while. Manhole covers became an issue. And I mean, we've been running on street courses for quite a few years now, even going back to when you ran at Long Beach in the first one, was at 75, 74, and the first one was an F5000 race. I mean, is that an issue that shouldn't we be past this? I thought they welded all the manhole covers down when we raced on tracks.
Well, they're supposed to, yeah. I mean, it should be an issue that doesn't rear its head, because there have been enough street races now over the years to know what to do. And obviously they do have to weld down manhole covers and drain covers and everything. And of course, the thing is, manhole covers are heavy. I mean, they're solid iron, and they probably weigh, 50, 60 pounds. And you pluck one of those suckers up and it hits the bottom of the car. I mean, George Russell, who ran over it, was very lucky, because it ripped the bottom of the car right out. And of course, as you know, in those Formula One cars and Indy cars, I mean, your backside is like, you know, an inch and a half off the ground. Well, those manhole covers are a good inch and a half thick. And it did pretty much destroy the car. And he was very lucky not to get hurt. And, of course, the car could, you know, those big, hot, sticky tires could fling it down the road and then hit somebody else. So, yeah, I mean, they got over the issue. It was in practice. But it did cost Williams valuable time and money, which, quite honestly, just at the moment, they don't seem to have. But, yeah, they should have got over that by now. Of course, when we raced at Spa, I don't suppose for a minute they thought about welding down the manhole covers. And we didn't think about it either, really. So, you know. But as you say, Azerbaijan turned into be another interesting race. Ferrari showed such colossal speed in testing in winter in Barcelona, which is the next race. And everybody was, you know, muttering to themselves, "Oh, my God, when we get to Australia, they're going to walk it." Well, so far, they have not done very well, in as much as Mercedes have won all four races so far. And come first and second as well. And the one place they thought would be Azerbaijan, the Baku circuit in Azerbaijan, because it has the longest straight. It's over a mile long. And they thought the Ferraris would, you know, just go so fast down there, they'd be uncatchable. But it didn't happen out that way in the end. So it turned into a relatively interesting race. But the two Mercedes did kind of disappear.
Yeah, it's certainly frustrating, because you're thinking, okay, this is the race Ferrari's going to step up. And then it's next race. Okay, this is the race where they step up. And then you see that start that Bottas and Hamilton had. You're like, come on, guys, come on, catch them. And it's like, 1-2, you know. It's like, okay, now what? Can they get them on the pit stops?
Vettel is so, I mean, he is a demon starter.
Mm-hmm.
Bottas just made an absolutely staggering start from the pole. And showed no mercy to Hamilton when they went into turn one. And Hamilton sort of looked pretty racy going to turn two and three, but then he kind of dropped back and then faded a bit. It was like 7 seconds behind at one stage. But they had control of the race all the time. And, you know, the Red Bulls with the Honda engine, Gasly was quickest in free practice two by dint of a bit of good towing, drafting down that big straight. And they showed pretty good form in the race. They weren't that much slower. And Verstappen and the guys at Red Bull are saying, pointing the finger at the car a bit too, not just the engine. They're saying that the car aerodynamic needs to be changed a bit because they are not as quick as they've been through some of the corners, but they're still a bit slow down the straight. But the Honda engine showed good reliability. Well, we did have one fail, but they did show good reliability.
Is Monaco the next race where we think that maybe somebody like Red Bull or somebody can step up and actually compete with Team Mercedes?
I think you're right. Now, Barcelona is coming up next week, but that has a couple of, well, it has one very long straight.
Right.
And it has a couple of two pretty good straights. But the Red Bull has always gone very well there. Verstappen, of course, winning his first Grand Prix there. In his first race in a Red Bull, holding off Raikkonen in the Ferrari, which is a pretty stout effort. And I think the Honda engine has got more power, has seems to have a bit more reliability. So they might not, they'll be pretty quick in Barcelona. But 2 weeks after that, Moreway weekend, I really think the Red Bull could come into its own and look very, very, very fast. Because Red Bulls always go so well at Monte Carlo, because you know, Adrian Newey, the designer, has has got the aerodynamic and chassis dynamic compromised down to probably, you know, has been the best car for the last couple of years, but it's been down on power. Now, if it's got equal power, I mean, the places like Monaco, it could be quick.
Switching gears to IndyCar, IndyCar probably reached its zenith in the most recent history in the early 90s when Mansell came over from the Williams team and ran with Newman Haas and won the championship. And you had Emerson Fittipaldi come out of retirement and run so well in IndyCar and that. And then you had the split, you know, with the IRL and CART, whatnot, and IndyCar kind of fell to the wayside a bit in the standing of the world motorsports I'm speaking about. Recently, though, IndyCar has been gaining momentum, especially with Fernando Alonso racing 2 years ago and coming back with McLaren now this year. You have Marcus Ericsson coming over running in IndyCar this year. Has IndyCar raised its overall kind of status from a world point of view in motorsports, do you think?
I think it has, and if it hasn't, it should have done. I think people in Europe being a bit sort of, you know, a bit obstinate about the success of IndyCar, because the last couple of years, the last 3 years, you know, you've had like 7, 8, 9 different winners in a series with only like 17 or 18 races. I mean, that is absolutely phenomenal. And we've had guys like Dixon, you know, winning at Mid-Ohio from the back, you know, 3 years ago. So I think it's got a lot of good racing left. We saw the race at Coda, which was very exciting. The Long Beach race was a bit of a yawn, but I think that IndyCar racing is, you know, coming back to where it used to be in the old days. You know, because you've got you have a stock chassis. When I say stock, I mean, you know, everybody's got the same chassis, just the different setup that the teams do. And, of course, you've got two power units, the Chevrolet and the Honda, which seem to be pretty evenly matched, although Honda at the moment are looking very strong this year. So I think that the upcoming two races at Indy, the road race, which is that next week, the road race.
Yes.
Then, of course, you've got qualifying and the race itself. As you say, for the 500, Fernando Alonso is going to have another go. And I expect him to be competitive. Do I expect him to just win? No way. I mean, there's no way he's going to just take on people like, like Scott Dixon and Alex Rossi and people like that who now, Alex Rossi's got a couple of years behind him. I mean, he's a fast kid. And then, of course, you've always got the overpowering teams of Penske, Will Power. They're tough, tough guys. So it's going to be no cakewalk for Alonso, but I do expect him to, really show well there. And, of course, the Indy 500 is a bit of a lottery. It's a long race, 500 miles. You tend to think of it as, just like any other IndyCar race, but 500 miles is a long way. And strategy can change, strategy can make them up. And, of course, can make a huge difference to strategy. And, of course, you also need that bit of luck. You just stop at the wrong time and the caution flag comes out the next lap and all those sort of misfortunes can befall you at Indy. And they're very hard to recover from. And the cars are so evenly matched that, if you're a lap down and you're lapping at the same speed or even slightly quicker than the leader, you can never make it up unless you have a bit of luck. So it is a lottery, and I expect it to be a very, very competitive race again this year. And obviously super fast. The cars are very fast this year. So, I'm looking forward to a very good IndyCar season. And I think they've made a very wise move in taking on NBC to do all the races. The last few seasons have been split between ABC, who've always done the 500. I think this year will be the first time that ABC hasn't done the 500 for 50 years. And I think the NBC crew are going to be right up to it. And, of course, they've got Danica Patrick as one of their analysts, so that'll add a bit of interest to a lot of people who would be just casual TV viewers. To have Danica on board, I think, will be a big help for the broadcast team. And, of course, they'll be led by Ron Tirico, and of course, Lee will be calling the race. So I think it'll be a very good show, and I know they're hoping for good ratings. But I think having the same broadcaster for every single race this year will go a long way to solidifying IndyCar's place in the motorsport structure of the USA. And I think that they can only grow more and more because it is a very competitive series.
It certainly is. We're chatting with motorsports commentator and author David Hobbs on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. In fact, you'll be making your triumphant Midwest return to Indianapolis Indy 500 weekend at Indianapolis doing a book signing. So it'll be your chance, the listener, to come out and meet David Hobbs and get a signed copy of his book and some memorabilia too at the Indy Memorabilia Show, which is going to be held at Indianapolis right in the grounds of Indianapolis, which is free on Saturday. And it is probably one of the funnest days at the track besides, of course, the 500 itself. And we get about 100,000 people there. It's a lot of fun, a lot of people there, autograph sessions and whatnot. And, of course, yourself, David, you'll be there, which we did that last year, and it was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
I should be there with you, Steve, and Sue, I've no doubt. And I should be selling my book off. You'll find a stand there. And last year, that memorabilia hall was very, very busy, very crowded, a lot of people. We sold quite a few books, if I remember rightly, so hoping we can do the same again this year.
Should be a lot of fun. And we were telling people, a lot of people hadn't seen you in a while, those involved in the race and at the Speedway. We were telling people, this was your first time you've been back at Indianapolis in the month of May since 1976. Well, I'm flipping through, and you and I both were like, oh, yeah, 76. That was the last time you drove in the race. Now, you'd been there a few times when the U.S. Grand Prix was there, and you were doing Speed Vision and whatnot there. With the TV, but it was your first time in May. So I'm flipping through one day on YouTube, and they had, I believe it was 1989 IndyCar final day, bump day, or some type of coverage with Bob Varsha. And there's Bob Varsha. And then from the side, who steps in but David Hobbs? And I had totally forgotten about, as apparently you have too, that you were there with Varsha, and I think it was 89 or 90 doing qualifying.
I'd forgotten all about it.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
I think it might have been 89, because I think Daly.
Right.
Yeah, because then Derek Daly started to do that. So.
But I still didn't go to the race that year. I just didn't.
Correct.
I just
right.
Didn't bump it. So I was right that I hadn't been back to the race. But, you're right. I did do qualifying with Bob Varsha. I got a feeling that Bob Jenkins was involved in that somehow, too.
Yeah, I believe it was a split where I think they did, part of it might have been on ABC and then part of it might have been on ESPN. Yeah. But, Yeah, it was premium. Oh yeah, there's Hobble. Okay, well, so much. So, once again, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it, and this is my last in studio show for. Well, actually, I'll be down in Indy next week, and then I'll be actually back here qualifying weekend. We'll do a studio show, Jeff and I, and then I'll be back down in Indianapolis again. So looking forward to that and seeing you. 500 weekend. So thank you, David. And any predictions coming up on Barcelona next week?
Well, boy, I mean, the way that the Mercedes team have got that act together, you can't help but think that one of the two Mercedes is going to win. Valtteri Bottas is leading the championship by 1 point at the moment because he did the fastest lap in Baku, and that gave him an extra point. So we keep hoping that Ferrari is going to show their hand. They're slipping dangerously behind in the points already. I mean, they're 74 points behind in the Constructors' Championship, and Vettel's 35 points behind in the drivers, with a lot of drivers breathing right down his neck. I mean, right down his neck. I'm still waiting to see Leclerc dust Vettel off.
Yes.
And which is coming, for sure. And, I think that Barcelona's got quite a few surprises. And I think the Honda might be quick enough through turns 2, 3, 4, and 5, and then up through, and then 8, 9, 10, and 11 are very Red Bull-type corners. And if he can get out the front, he's going to be very difficult to overtake like he was back when he beat Raikkonen. So, no, I think Barcelona could be a good race next week.
All right, very good. David, thank you once again, and we look forward to chatting with you again. David Hobbs joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Thank you.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
We'll be back after this on the Final Inspection Show.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.